The intro was going out across the stream correctly, but it was not going back. My bad. this is Pure Decking, show number 512 for Thursday, March the 23rd, 1775. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and trying to decide when an old 3D printer becomes less a repair project and more a source of parts. Tonight we have a madman. What's up, madman?
Oh, nothing much, and I'm going with when it's two generations out of date, and it takes more than an hour and a half to fix it.
Yeah, that's not how windmills do not work that way. that's not how any of that works. Because when you say out of date, the general design for 3D printers hasn't changed in like 7 years. you know, you've got the newer Core XY machines coming out, but those are, there are things about that I could spend hours talking about, but I doubt either of you really want that. And we have an RU.
Well, that's why there was that second one, and takes more than an hour and a half to fix.
Yeah, almost everything on a 3D printer takes longer.
Then they're all out of date, my friend. It should be nothing but parts.
Not much. Apologies up ahead if I do have some sound issues. I'm having some technical issues with TeamSpeak lately, and I'm struggling to figure it out.
Has your router drank enough beer to keep itself cool?
Yes.
Wow. Yep.
We'll see how we go.
Have you made the proper sacrifices to the computing gods?
I have. 3 laptop minis and a Mac.
Well, you forgot the rubber chicken.
Oh, that's implied.
There is a white paper that was published and accepted, an RFC, on server diagnosis via rubber chicken. If you're ever bored, look it up.
Does not surprise me.
It describes the exact placement of the rubber chicken on the misbehaving server to get a proper diagnosis. The story is apparently there was a server somewhere that didn't work right unless it had this rubber chicken on it in the right exact locations.
I've heard of more. I come from the racing community, dude. Superstition is everywhere. They are probably one of the most superstitious people out there when it comes to having something placed correctly on the dash or in the glove box or...
Remember, you have to tie the garage door pull cord into a perfect noose for... Oh, wait.
Solve that crime 12 hours before the FBI got there. All from the comfort of my chair in Australia.
So, anyways, I guess... So, this discussion topic... The article I'm getting it from is a political article, so we're kind of taking a risk that we might diverge into politics here. I don't intend to do that because I actually want to talk about the suggestion, but I'll start with the article here. It's from Gizmodo. The loudest voice calling for dramatic big tech breakup in the 2024 presidential election might not be coming from President Joe Biden or progressive leftists, but rather from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. The conservative governor and probable presidential candidate revealed his views at a private event caught on video, where he said dominant tech firms like Google and Meta are ruining our country and should be broken up. In his view, big tech behemoths are far worse for society than Standard Oil or other monopolistic industry titans from the Gilded Age, he said. I'm not going to read the rest of the article because it gets into politics and, you know, this and that about DeSantis, and I don't really want to talk about DeSantis versus anybody else. I want to talk about the idea of breaking up the big tech companies. You know, so that would be things like Google, Amazon, Meta, Microsoft, and possibly Apple. Apple's kind of the odd one out on that one, but... those come to mind as companies that at least should be looked into for antitrust.
One step further than you, Morps.
Oh, yeah?
I think modern computing for normies was a mistake.
You shouldn't have been given general computers. You should have been given appliances.
They shouldn't have been given general access to so much information and communication. It's been a mistake.
So the internet for normies was a mistake.
I think it was a mistake.
Well, given how many people don't even have regular computers anymore, they use a tablet, a cell phone, and then if they want to play games like a PlayStation or a Switch, they don't even bother with a regular computer at home. They use them at work, but I know several people like that. I've got family like that.
Like, I'm really starting to understand why way back in the day when we had tribal systems, things like that, that you know, some people just had to go take a walk and leave for the existence of the tribe to stay harmonious.
Banishment?
Yeah, I'm understanding banishment. I'm really understanding like some of the medieval tortures for women. You know, they keep your mouth shut, fucking iron masks and things like that for blabbermouths and stuff.
It's interesting. It's not where I thought this was going to go. That's interesting.
Well, don't get me wrong. The internet's given me a pathway to voice my retarded opinions, but my retarded opinions have a beginning, a middle, and an end. It means they do end, and I won't come around and protest your fucking house for being different to my idea.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think the romanticization of the 60s fucking boomer movement and shit like that has infected modern kids.
Well, when it comes to the idea of just breaking up the big tech companies, I'm not opposed to using the Sherman Antitrust Act on a monopoly. I just want to look at it on what type of monopoly is it, and is it serving the community before we break it up? Like with Standard Oil, when it existed, kerosene was getting safer every year it existed and getting cheaper every year it existed. So I didn't see a point in breaking up Standard Oil. It was serving the community. So you just look at this idea of Google. Is it still serving humanity, or has it become a leech?
Well, comparing my Google search results to things like DuckDuckGo and even Bing and CRX and other search engines, I would argue it sucks at it.
Yeah. Yeah, Bing is far superior these days.
Which is
That Russian search engine's better.
Yeah, which I never pronounced the name of it. Weird that Bing has somehow gotten decent search results over Google. But you know, at the same time, you know, there are competitors. We're even pointing it out. I mean, I think in my mind, Facebook, well, Meta, and Amazon are probably the two that really need attention. I think DeSantis, they were talking about Google. But I don't really want to get into pros or cons of DeSantis. I mean, the fact that he's wanting to even look at the tech companies, because I think there is some misbehavior going on there, is cool, and you know, I like that. But
Oops.
All right.
That's DeSantis is just saying, you haven't paid me enough.
You might be right about that.
It's a fucking shakedown technique, dude. It's a goddamn shakedown technique.
Well, okay, let's put the politics out of it and just talk about the idea of looking at the techs as monopolies.
Yeah.
Amazon and Facebook, definitely, because Meta has a bad habit of buying their competition.
They're just using the Microsoft competition.
Yeah.
Remember when Bill Gates is just, instead of competing with anything, he just bought it.
Well,
people are doing little startup companies hoping that Bill Gates would come around and buy it. Shit, The Simpsons even did a stupid episode about it.
Well, I mean, Microsoft, I don't think actually originated any of their technology stack. I mean, they've certainly expanded and developed on it, but I don't think they originated any of it. DOS, their original operating system, their original product, they bought that. They bought the first version of DOS, the source code, so they could port it to the IBM PC platform. BASIC, their free BASIC. It wasn't free BASIC. It was just BASIC. that was an open standard. That came from several places. So they wrote an implementation of BASIC, which they then licensed out to Apple, Commodore, a bunch of companies.
Didn't Xerox actually work on the GUI and the mouse originally?
Yeah, they did. Both Apple and Microsoft got a bunch of GUI stuff from Xerox. And
not a company you would think of when it comes to operating systems.
Well, it came out of their research. It came out of their research lab. But, Xerox fucked up. They basically gave away one of the most capital-generating software products of the 90s. But they didn't, Internet Explorer, they bought the original browser that they turned into Internet Explorer. Office 365 was originally Outlook.com, and they bought the technology to do that when they bought Hotmail. So they didn't even develop that stuff. They bought Hotmail, turned that into Outlook.com, and then further developed Outlook.com into Office 365, and which is now Microsoft 365. Windows, the current builds of Windows are based off of a kernel that IBM wrote for Microsoft under contract when they were trying to port the Windows Server platform over to IBM's things. There were some other things, which amusingly enough meant that a lot of Microsoft engineers were actually writing the OS2 warp code. Gee, I wonder who got the better deal out of that. and even Teams is based off of Link, which is based off of Skype, which they bought. So I don't know that Microsoft has. I mean, they bought Virtual PC back in the day. That's where their virtualization platform came from. I'm trying to think of any major Microsoft product that they didn't just buy the initial version of it and then continue to develop. Now, they've done a lot of development and implementation on it. I don't mean any disrespect to Microsoft development. It's just, I don't think they've actually originated any ideas. I think it's all just been development on top of things that they bought.
Yeah, it's a way.
So, but again, they buy up their competition, although, you know, since the platform shift to mobile, they haven't really been as competitive in that space. I think that's one of the reasons they're pushing their Office 365 stuff so hard, is they want to move to that subscription platform for businesses.
Yeah, they kind of weren't able to break into it when their mobile phones died, which I'm not sure why that happened. They seemed like good phones.
The market was already saturated by Android and iOS. It's not enough to be good. If you want to break into a market and replace a current leader, you need an incentive for people to move from the current leader to your platform.
Well, I see Rumble's doing pretty well, knocking on YouTube store.
Well, and that's YouTube's fuck up for going in with the whole demonetization, deplatforming, and then not having clear policy guides on that, right? So that's,
well, changing them every day didn't
right.
help.
I mean, you couldn't. It's. I'm not saying they should have just allowed anything and everything, but it should have been clear. Like, if I go to post a YouTube video, I should be able to read their policies and have a pretty good understanding of what violates them and what doesn't. And that's not the case, because they have this whole community guidelines thing where they judge things based on content, and they have what they call borderline content. So, because they started doing that, they created a position where somebody else in the market could come in and say, here's our guidelines, we're going to pay you like YouTube does, and you know, now Rumble's coming in on top, because I mean, they're still growing, YouTube is still the major thing, but I think you're going to see Rumble start taking some pretty good market share from YouTube over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of people move there, and Odyssey as well. Odyssey is like the backup for their Rumble now.
The only people I know that have moved exclusively to Rumble were kicked from YouTube. I know of a lot of content providers that do both.
Well, they still want to, you know, everybody still wants to be on YouTube because that's where a large audience is. But, you know, more and more, I think you're going to see people, you know, I think you're going to see some diversity there. But again, that's more because YouTube, I think, has made a mistake with the way they're doing their policy work, and they're creating a position in the market that they used to hold, and now they're kind of abandoning because they're doing this policy stuff that, again, I don't think it's even that they're having, you know, saying, oh, you can do this, you can't do that. It's that it's not clear what's allowed. It's that you don't know what's violating the rules.
But on the breakups, I think Amazon is something you could definitely go after under antitrust.
Yeah.
Now, Facebook, I don't think it should be broken up. I think it should be regulated. And the reason I say that is Facebook's one of the companies that, to be successful, you need market capture. The reason people are on Facebook is that's where the people are.
Well, yeah, I mean, the only reason I have a Facebook account is because I have family who has a Facebook account, right?
Yeah, and that's the only reason to be on any social network. Unless it's a social network devoted to a specific thing, the way BBSs used to be, mm-hmm. I would consider them social networks. The only way that you're going to have a generalized one is that's where the majority of people are. So I don't see it as something that you can break up and keep the business. I think it's just something you're going to have to regulate. And I'm cool with going in and saying, hi, here are the free speech rules for the U.S. This is what you abide by.
Well, with Facebook, well, Meta, what bothers me about them is the way they buy up competitors when they start coming up the chain, right? I don't remember why they didn't buy Twitter. I think they tried. I don't remember the details on that one. But, you know,
the CIA didn't want to sell it.
Oh, is that what it was?
The CIA didn't want to sell it to the FBI.
But
you fucking laugh, but it's the truth deep down inside. You know it to be true.
But but they bought Instagram. They bought Oculus. They bought tons of stuff.
You know, Oculus wasn't really a competitor as far as social networking goes, though. That was just we're breaking into video games.
Yeah, it's true. But I mean, they do have a habit of buying up small up and coming stuff. So, you know, sort of like you were joking about Microsoft back in the day doing that. Google did it too for a little while. So, I mean, I think, you know, Google, I think, I'm not saying they need broken up, but I'm saying it's worth looking into with I would say definitely Google, Amazon, Facebook. Those are my top three. Microsoft and Apple should probably be on that list too. But
I'd like to have a look at Amazon hard for labor laws.
Oh, Amazon is the top of the list between the labor laws, the market capture on online shopping, the fact that they abuse their position for their Amazon Basics products. So they see a category that's selling well. They then use that to make their own in-house brand. And then when you search for the brand they're trying to replace, their brand comes up on top. They've gotten caught doing that lots of times.
Yeah, that.
Not to mention, there's just the basic guarantee if they guarantee a shipping time and don't meet it.
Between you and the seller, though. That's they're fucking up their contract. So,
well, a lot of times that is between you and Amazon, because most of the guaranteed ship dates I've seen are from Amazon products.
I haven't had Amazon make a guaranteed ship date in 6 months.
Well, every time I buy something and it's...
I would say the majority of things I've ordered from Amazon, they haven't made their guarantee ship rate in 6 months.
The third parties you can buy through Amazon, I've always been given a range. I've never been given a guarantee.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But... So I think it's worth looking into these guys. I mean, when they're talking about DeSantis, I know that he's coming at it from the, oh, you're censoring the right wing, like we were talking about with Rumble and YouTube. And I think there's something worth looking at there, and that these companies, I think, are trying to push their political preferences. Google, there's a video floating around after Trump got elected of saying, we have to make sure this never happens again. Which, again, you know, that was somebody being upset and just saying something as a reaction. But I think it's worth looking into what these, you know, companies are doing, especially when they do control large segments of the market. Of course, the gag of it is that none of these companies existed 20 years ago, so, well, 30 years ago. Go ahead.
One thing I think you could look into, at least as far as Google and YouTube are concerned, and even Facebook, they outsource their, how do I phrase this? It's not quite quality check. They're fact-checking. They outsource their fact-checking to third parties.
Yeah, they do.
And the third parties they outsource to all are left-leaning.
So
they're claiming neutrality, and you could kind of argue they are because they're not the ones checking this shit. But the people they're having check this shit aren't neutral.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably fair. I mean, I think some of these practices are worth looking into, whether it's a regulatory problem, like you said, whether it's a, you know, whether it's a market cap problem, like a monopolization problem, or like, are you, you know, saying, you know, competing intelligence agencies? I almost wouldn't even care if it is a monopoly, as long as the rules were fucking clear. You know what I mean?
Rules haven't been clear on anything for 10 years, man.
I know. That's what I
was... Well, that's what I'm thinking. If we're going to keep it a monopoly, then the government needs to step in and regulate it. If it's a natural monopoly, natural monopolies, we regulate.
Last thing I want is government intervention. Hi, we're from the government. We're here to help. Oh, fuck.
No, it's like, why did half your staff just light themselves on fire and jump out windows? Well... I work in a heavily regulated industry right now. You do too, madman. I mean, I can only imagine.
I don't think ours should be as regulated as it is. We don't work in a monopoly industry.
No, we do not.
Granted, I'm on the outside looking in at your industry, and I don't trust your fucking industry, government regulated or not.
Well, every collapse that you can point to in the last 50 years, I can point to the reason the government's to blame for it.
I know this is going back to bringing up, but that's all right.
But going back to the whole idea of natural monopolies, the reason I think the government should step in on a natural monopoly is there isn't a way for the market to correct it. I like the most basic example of a natural monopoly is your power company. It's not going to be financially viable or even socially viable for three power companies to run three sets of lines to every house in your neighborhood.
No.
So if you're stuck with only having one provider, then yes, it's the government's job to step in and make sure they're not fucking you.
Well.
So with Facebook, if the whole idea of social networking is we have to have everyone on this one area to actually have the network, then the government should step in and say, is this network violating your rights? Are they lying to you? Is this stuff fraudulent that they're throwing up there? With the example of Facebook.
Well, if we're getting into breaking stuff up and removing large institutions that appear to be corrupt or have zero trust left with the public, I would say pharma.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the sound of no one disagreeing. Yeah.
Well, I was just, with the whole idea of a monopoly, am I wrong on that thought? If there's not competition, the government should regulate it?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm loath to suggest government regulation for anything because they're generally bad at it. I was actually having this conversation with Suave earlier. I was teasing him a little bit because of his position and, you know, the fact that I was enjoying the fact that he was, you know, he was decrying some government regs he was having to deal with. And normally our conversations, I would have expected him to go the other way. And it was like, well, it's not about whether they regulate or not. It's about, is it good regulation? And this stuff is stupid. So it was funny.
That's That's probably a better answer there. It's not whether or not it's good regulation. It's stupid. You know? Are they making people's lives better, or are they making it harder to justify another person's fucking job in their department? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and I agree with that.
I'm sick of the parasite fucking society that lives off the worker. I know that sounds a little Das Kapital, but the fucking bureaucratic bullshit you have to go through to just, okay, I want to start a business that puts, fucking septic tanks in the backyard. I need a shovel, a flatbed, and a couple of dudes to start it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But no, with the government regulation, I got to go to school for 4 years, get a fucking degree in it. I got to have a license and bonding and insurance.
And pay $1,000 to have an inspector come out and certify.
I got to have insurances, fucking, you know what I mean? The just to even start digging a hole is a 4-year fucking nightmare process. That's the problem. We've got this whole class of people that just sit there filing paperwork for bullshit regulations that we don't fucking need.
Well, that was something I actually tried to bring up on the last show. You were off wrestling with Drop Bears, but we were talking about how they're using AI to generate a lot of the language of documents. I think somehow we got on the idea of AI generating legal documents, right?
And contracts. I could see a lot of lawyers being put out of business because any boilerplate legal document, like a contract, and you've already seen this with wills and powers of attorney here, they're automated.
Well, so
because it's literally put your name here, here, and here, and then you have the legal document.
Right. And where I was going with that was they're starting to use AI to parse some of the, well, they already use OCR and scripts to parse some of these documents to pull out information to stick into automated forms, right? So I was kind of wondering out loud how much boilerplate bullshit in legal documents and things like that is like no human is ever going to read, but the AI generates the legal language, and then another AI, you know, goes and gets the bits that matter out of the legal language, and no human ever actually looks at the contract anymore, because why would you waste the time? And I wonder if that's kind of where we're going with some of this shit.
Oh, well, I can see that, because I already know people that don't actually read their mortgage contracts. They just sign the dotted line.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where a few weeks ago the articles of IQs are sharply dropping in the Western world, and we don't know why. Because no one reads anything anymore. They just fucking scroll to the bottom, fucking click yes, and move on.
Shrink wrap agreements will be the downfall of society. I can get behind that.
Well, it breeds low trust, see? Because then you lose your account. You're like, what the fuck? You know, it was just a boilerplate agreement. Yeah, so you don't trust the next one. And this happens enough to when everybody starts mistrusting everything. Like, I think the next big push will be to verify that you're actually human online.
Oh, you know that's coming. I mean, they already do it with CAPTCHAs and stuff like that, but they've shown
they're gonna want
AIs that can beat CAPTCHAs, so they're going to want something else.
Yeah, you're going to have to prove you're you.
Please drink the verification can.
Uh-huh. Like I hope it's just non-invasive like that, but you know it's going to be way more invasive than that. And then they're going to be like, oh, oopsie, we lost that trust and verified fucking data set to hackers. How bad? Sorry. We'll send you a check for you're hurt and whatever. I think the Equifax checks are just starting to go out now, aren't they? For the amount of shit that they lost. Remember the Equifax?
Look at how much those Equifax checks are.
Yeah, look at $5 something each.
I think on the low, I think the low end is around $20. I think the high end is like maybe $100.
Yeah. Well, they wait fucking 6 years.
Memory, I've been drinking.
Yeah, I know. I didn't prepare for this. That's the next big one, man. It's going to be having to verify you're a human. I mean, the AI pain hasn't even begun yet.
dead internet theory, dude. It's going to be dead internet theory.
Well, speaking of dead, I think your discussion is. You want to move on to articles?
Yep. Next article I have. I don't have that many, but that's all right because I enjoy beating them up. This one's a fun one. It's from Ars Technica. Click to cancel rule would penalize companies that make you cancel by phone. Canceling? What? Huh?
Yeah, sorry, that was confusing.
Well, okay, so I don't know about in Australia, but stateside, there are a lot of companies out there where you can sign up for a subscription online, quick, just click here, and you're done. You want to cancel it? Oh, that's a help desk ticket. We need it in written notice. We must receive the written notice, you know, 60 days before the subscription ends, but, you know, not 30 days before the subscription ends. The written notice must be in blood, must be on pink paper, must be hand-delivered by a feathered, by a feather-wielding bard, and, so canceling a subscription, sort of calling your bank and filing a chargeback, can be really hard.
I've never canceled anything because I'm not a joiner.
And honestly, I will tell you, with some of these guys that are very difficult to cancel a subscription because it's like, oh no, we just took you month to month in case you wanted to continue. What? It's like, okay, well, that's fraud. I'm calling my bank and issuing a chargeback. And then they'll usually, you know, you threaten a chargeback. Most of these subscription companies will back down if you threaten that because if enough companies get chargeback, you know, if they get enough chargebacks, they'll have their credit rating downgraded and won't be able to do business. So usually that gets their attention. If you're like, okay, well, this is fraud, I'm doing a chargeback. That usually gets their attention. They might try to argue with you, oh, no, you signed this contract. It's like, yeah, well, that's not what that contract said, and I tried to cancel, and you all wouldn't let me. So the article here. Canceling a subscription should be just as easy as signing up for the service, the Federal Trade Commission said in a proposed click-to-cancel rule announced today. If approved, the plan would, quote, put an end to companies requiring you to call customer service to cancel an account that you opened on their website, unquote, FTC Commissioner Seb. The FTC said the click-to-cancel rule would require sellers, quote, to make it as easy for consumers to cancel their enrollment as it was to sign up, unquote. And quote, go a long way to rescuing customers from seemingly never-ending struggles to cancel unwanted subscription payment plans for everything from cosmetics to newspapers to gym memberships, unquote. The FTC said the proposed rule would enforce civil penalties and let the commission return money to harmed consumers. Quote, the proposal states that if consumers can sign up for subscriptions online, they should be able to cancel online with the same number of steps. If the consumers can open an account over the phone, they should be able to cancel it over the phone without endless delays, unquote, FTC Chair Lena Khan wrote. The FTC is seeking public comment on the proposal, which also includes other changes to the Commission's 1973 negative option rule. Quote, some businesses too often trick consumers into paying for subscriptions they no longer want or didn't sign up for in the first place, unquote, Khan said. The proposed rule requires a simple cancellation mechanism for any medium in which a consumer signs up for a service, including the internet, telephone, mail, and in person. It says, quote, on the internet, this click-to-cancel provision requires seller, at a minimum, to provide an accessible cancellation mechanism on the same website or web-based application used for sign-up. If the seller allows users to sign up using a phone, it must provide at a minimum a telephone number and ensure all calls to that number are answered during normal business hours. Further, to meet the requirement that the mechanism be at least as simple as the one used to initiate the recurring charge, any telephone call used for cancellation cannot be more expensive than the call used to enroll. Example, if the sign-up is toll-free, the cancellation must also be toll-free. For a recurring charge initiated through an in-person transaction, the seller must offer the simple cancellation mechanism through the internet or by telephone in addition to, where practical, the in-person method used to initiate the transaction, unquote. The proposed rule also targets the practice of trying to dissuade customers from canceling by offering different service options. Sellers would be allowed to, quote, pitch additional offers or modifications when a consumer tries to cancel their enrollment, unquote, but, quote, must first ask consumers whether they want to hear them, unquote, the FTC said. Quote, in other words, the seller must take no for an answer and upon hearing no, must immediately implement the cancellation process, unquote. Khan said the proposal would also address new business tactics like digital dark patterns, where firms deploy hard-to-see buttons, hidden pop-ups, or misleading links to manipulate customers away from canceling their subscription, unquote. The FTC will take comments on the proposal for 60 days after it is published in the Federal Register. Once the comment period begins, people can submit comments online or by mail. The notice of proposed rulemaking was approved in 3-1 in a party-line vote. A dissenting statement from Republican Christy Wilson said expanding the negative rule option, quote, may discourage companies from using negative option features that consumers prefer and enjoy because of potential liability, unquote. Given the example, I really wish she would have given examples there because I'm not sure what the hell they're talking about. Additionally, Wilson argued that the FTC, quote, does not have the authority to seek civil penalties in de novo Section 5 cases, unquote, referring to Section 5 of the Federal Trade Commission Act that prohibits unfair or deceptive acts. Wilson also appointed to the Supreme Court's AMG capital management decision in 2021 that said Section 13B of the FTC Act does not authorize the commission to seek monetary relief. So they go on, but that's pretty much the beef of it, or the brunt of it. It doesn't sound like that bad of a rule to me, but it also sounds like one that would be fairly easy to abuse in frivolous lawsuits, because it's like, well, it takes 3 steps to sign up and 4 to cancel. Well, that's not, you know.
Until the final phrasing comes out, I'm going to say it sounds like a good idea, but I want to see the final phrasing.
There you go. So, I mean, RU's already said you're not a joiner, so I don't. I mean, Madman, if you had issues with companies not letting you cancel, I've had one that immediately comes to mind. But
the only ones I've ever had an issue with were a cable company and one of the gym memberships I had.
So the one.
And,
go ahead.
So the way the gym membership ended up getting solved was, my debit card expired, and I just never gave them the new one.
Yeah.
That works.
See, the one that comes to mind for me was, I had a home security system on a previous house, and I sold the house, and I knew I had, like, I don't know, 5 months, 4 months, something like that, left on the contract for the security system. So I paid it because, you know, it was a contract. And, you know, I had submitted the written form and all this stuff to cancel it. It's like, yeah, I've sold the house. I'm sold the security system with the house. I'm not going to continue to pay for this. And they tried to argue with me. Oh, well, you know, we thought the new owners might want the system, so we took it to month to month. So you got the cancellation paperwork and took it to month to month? Oh, yeah, because, you know, we have on record here that the new owners might want it. Well, they told me they don't. So
you'd be charging the new owners, not me.
Right. And you know, and they said, well, so the guy starts, you know, trying to and all his way through it. And it's like, well, he was going to say we're going to leave it at month to month until we get a written cancel. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to be contacting my bank because I already sent you written notice to cancel the contract. At this point, it's fraud. And I'm going to be doing a chargeback and filing a filing a complaint. And they actually canceled it and returned the last month payment. That actually got their attention. Because I guess because I knew the magic words of chargeback and BBC complaint. So, you know, that kind of got them to back off. But I don't know that would work for every company. But I know in my experience, threatening a chargeback tends to get their attention. It also means,
yeah, you shouldn't have to go that far, and doing chargebacks can actually hurt you as well, depending on the company.
Yeah, because it basically means you're never doing business with that company again if you charge back to them. So, you know, doing a chargeback to a company you actively want to get rid of and never do business with again, hey, it's probably fine. But, well, like Amazon, like we were talking about earlier, if you still want to order things from Amazon from time to time, doing a chargeback to them because you know, they got shitty with you, might not go over so well. And they can contest chargebacks.
And depending on the company, they keep track of it. Their parent company may not want to do business with you either. So you may be thinking you're pissing off some rinky-dink gym somewhere but they're part of, I don't know, Supercorp, and then Amazon doesn't want to give you money anymore.
Yeah.
So you have to, you do have to be careful with that, but I don't know. I mean, have you ever had that?
Oh, and on the chargeback, another little hint, at least if you're in the States, don't run your debit card as a debit. Run it as a credit, because it's much easier to do chargebacks on a credit card than a debit card.
No, the only time I've had problems is my own fuck-up.
Yeah.
With traveling overseas, where I put down a deposit and gone, fuck, that just means I'm getting hit with two lots of money charges. I didn't think.
Yeah.
No, it was the one and only thing. So, yeah, I learned my lesson after it. It was an expensive lesson, but one that sunk in.
So, let's do the next story here. This one is... wow. It's also from Ars Technica. Journalist plugs in unknown USB device mailed to him, and it exploded.
Wow. We're back to hackers can make my computer explode headlines again.
I think they just put C4 in a flash drive, but yeah.
Wow.
I was just thinking you'd get viruses that way.
It's no secret that USB flash drives, such as small and unremarkable as they may look, can be turned into agents of chaos. Over the years, we've seen them used to infiltrate the Iranian nuclear facility, infect critical control systems, U.S. power plants, morph into programmable, undetectable attack platforms, and destroy attached computers with a surprise 220-volt electrical surge. These are just a few examples. They should be enough to preclude one from inserting a mysterious, unsolicited USB drive mailed to them into a computer. Unfortunately, one Ecuadorian journalist didn't get the memo. As reported by the Agence France Press via CBS News on Friday, five Ecuadorian journalists have received USB drives in the mail from Quinsalama. Each of these USB sticks was meant to explode when activated. Upon receiving the drive, Lena Artesia of Ucavision TV station in Guayaquil inserted into his computer, at which point it exploded. According to a police official who spoke with the AFP, the journalist suffered mild face and hand injuries and no one else was harmed. According to the police official Javier Chongo, the flash drive that went off had a 5-volt explosive charge and is thought to have used RDX, also known as T4, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. Militaries, including the U.S., use RDX, which, quote, can be used alone as a base charge for detonators or mixed with other explosives, such as TNT, end quote. Chango said it comes in capsules measuring about 1 centimeter, but only half of it was activated when the drive in the drive that Artiga plugged in, which likely saved him some harm. On Monday, Fundamentalos, an Ecuadorian nonprofit focused on media rights, put out a statement on the incidents, which saw letters accompanied by USB stick bombs sent to two more journalists in Guayaquil and two journalists in Ecuador's capital. Fundamentalos said Alvo Rosero, who works at the EXA-FM radio station, also received an envelope with a flash drive on March 15th. He gave it to a producer who used a cable with an adapter to connect it to a computer. The radio station got lucky, though, as the flash drive didn't explode. Police determined that the drive featured explosives, but believed it didn't explode because the adapter the producer used didn't have enough juice to activate it, Fundamentalos said. Yet another reporter attempted to access the drive's unknown content. Milton Perez at Tucumoros Quantimo offices might have set off USB sticks explosives if he had plugged into the computer properly, according to he didn't turn it upside down three times. Police intercepted a fourth drive sent to Carlos Vera in Guayaquil and performed a, quote, controlled detonation on one sent to Mercado Oyoya at TC Television in Guayaquil, BBC reported. So, somebody is mailing USB drive bombs that are using a little 5-volt supply. Oh, God, are you? I just looked at that picture you posted. Oh, my God. That's Not right. Shit's not right. But yeah, somebody's mailing flash drive bombs to journalists.
Yeah. I'm actually quite shocked it's just new.
I'm shocked they managed to get enough explosive and a little flash drive to make it do anything.
Oh, I'd be sending him a whole hard drive.
Really?
External hard drive pack with cows that you'd harvest in Minecraft sort of thing. I don't know which is more entertaining.
C4 packed thumb drive would do.
I don't know. Here's one we prepared earlier, Madman. Plug it in. But I don't know what's more amusing, that this is the first time anyone's thought to do that, or you pronouncing Asian names or Latin American names.
They're Latin American. It's Ecuador.
Yeah, I don't know which is funnier, the Asian or the Latin American ones.
I went to an American school system, so I speak American like Jesus did.
Look, I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of this. Yeah, get better, Colombian or whoever is doing this. Get a bigger hard drive.
Yeah, bigger hard drive.
Bang for your buck, as they say.
And you're going to want to charge up a capacitor in the flash drive, sort of like the bad USB sticks do to discharge into the machine a lot of voltage. That way you can actually set off a better explosive, because the little 5-volt line is probably not enough to set off most... we probably should not be giving out tips on how to make...
No, I know. But, yeah, I'm just shocked that this is the first time we're hearing about it.
I'm going to go with I'm happy that this is shocking.
Well, you take that moral high ground, Madman. But you're shocked that I'm shocked.
Can he be shocked? It's shocked that you're shocked and I've been shocked? No, mm-hmm. Wait, I just plugged something into the wall. Never mind.
Must piss someone off if they got to the point where they're going to make a micro-explosive. Maybe they're not trying to damage the journalists. Maybe they're trying to damage the equipment.
Or just scare them.
That too?
It's like, I don't want to kill anybody. I just want to scare them as they fall off the building.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're going to see more of it.
Well, yeah, I guess, especially because people, especially journalists are going to be real, eager to plug in a flash drive thinking somebody sent them a scoop,
Well, I would have thought they'd be more suspicious of getting shit in the mail like that.
I think I would have thought they would have had,
the phishing training of don't plug stuff that you find in the parking lot in your computer.
Well, yeah.
Well, that.
I mean, not into their computer. Like, if I was running an organization like that, I would have a sacrificial laptop that you have in a closet that's not hooked up to anything, and you use that to verify the contents of a flash drive.
Or I can go one step further and help journalists.
I don't know how that helps with the explosive problem, but go ahead.
I can help journalists with this problem. Okay, go down and buy a USB extension cord, roughly the longest one you can get, and then plug your drive in that you got in the mail, then take the other cord and then go into another room and plug it in.
Or get you a spudger. You can, they're nothing, a little metal shim or plastic shim, just something. And anytime you get a flash drive in the mail, just, crack the casing off and make sure it's not packed with something weird.
Yeah.
Because I'll be honest, damn near every flash drive I've had, I've accidentally cracked the casing off. So
they
doing it
so
on
much
purpose
better
should
without
be fairly
it.
Easy.
It looks so much cooler without the casing.
I've 3D printed the casing to replace on some of the ones I cracked off. Made them look pretty cool. I had a little biohazard symbol on there, 3D printed, all that shit. So... just real quick, last article here, because it's funny. The article that I picked was from mybroadband.co.za, but this story's a couple of different places. So we'll go ahead and throw this out there. Linus Teptic's main YouTube channel has been hacked. Well-known technology YouTube channel Linus Tech Tips has been hijacked by a malicious actor, and it is currently being used to promote a cryptocurrency scam. No one is immune to this shit.
Wow.
I think they've cleaned it up by now. But yeah, it was one of those, Tesla is giving away 100 million Bitcoin to some person who likes this video and goes and clicks on these phishing links. Let's see, what does it say here? The attackers appear to have ripped a recording of a 2021 session from the B-World conference that features investor Cathie Wood, former Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, and current CEO Elon Musk. The malicious live stream on Tech Tips channel is using keywords involving Tesla, GPT-4, and OpenAI to get views. It is prompting a QR code and URL pointing people to a Tesla-branded website claiming to give away crypto worth $100 million. Classic money-doubling scam, promising to pay you back double any Bitcoin, Ether, Doge, or US dollars, USD Tether that you send to a designated address. Okay, so it's not even a good scam. It's just the, here, send money here, we'll send you double your money back. Sure you will. But yeah, it's all this fake shit, some hacked website. So, even the big channels get this shit, right? So I'm sure some poor staff member at that channel is getting reamed right now for clicking on the phishing link or whatever it was. So, any thoughts on that other than just, gee, that's, terrible?
It happens to the best of us, right?
Yeah, it does.
That's hilarious, and it would probably hurt their brand a bit.
I don't think it'll hurt their brand that much.
They've been around for, they're ancient.
Oh, they'll turn it into content. They'll explain how we react. They'll have a whole 5-video series on it. And, here's us flogging the employee who clicked the phishing link.
Because they don't take themselves too seriously over there, from what I understand. At least I've never seen anything weird from them.
So, let's paste the URL in here so I can do this last link so we can do this. All right, so what I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is actually a pretty good write-up. It's from a company called StationX.net, which I think sells courses in digital security. But this particular one is a write-up on setting up a hacker lab using virtual machines. So, back in the day when I was learning this stuff, I had a collection of every computer I could get my hands on. I don't know, Madman, you saw some of my labs where I just had stacks of old machines on desks. This one is mostly using VMs on modern hardware and walking you through a few basic exercises of using Metasploit off of a Kali VM, the Metasploitable VM, having a Windows machine in the middle that you bounce your attacks through, walking you through setting up some Windows machines to use as targets, creating entire Active Directory lab, and some write-ups on Vagrant, Ansible, some Linux stuff. But it's actually a pretty good write-up. And I'll be honest, I've sent this to some of my employees at work that, who are asking about how to get better at this stuff. So I'm like, yeah, here, this. Do this. And it's even got warnings like, don't ever do this on a real Active Directory network and stuff like that when you're setting it up. But, there's enough here to understand and get some basic exercises done just to get your hands on some systems. And it's a hell of a lot easier than what it was back in the day. Oh, go ahead, Mehmet.
On setting up your own target machine, how do you get past the whole problem of you set it up, so shouldn't you know what its weaknesses are? And on an actual target machine, you wouldn't really know that, wouldn't you?
Well, so in this lab, just to get an idea for it, especially for beginners, you do want to know what it's vulnerable to, so that you know what to do. Because it does need to be vulnerable to something in your toolkit that you're testing, right? When you get into the real environments, you're right in that you often don't know what something's vulnerable to, and you have to determine that. And then it's a question of how do I determine that without consequence?
It well, you do it like I did, Madman. The computer you're going to attack, set it up shit-faced, blind, drunk, right, the day before. That way you have no fucking clue what you did the night before.
Well, what Madman is referring to is more than once when I was testing some of this stuff, I would have him come in and punch in passwords to virtual machines or even real machines so that I wouldn't know what they were.
Yeah.
And
that helps.
So I would go break into them. But I actually did have him go in and punch in codes and stuff to machines so that I have no way of knowing what they were. And there was one I couldn't get back into and I wanted to, and I asked him to go punch in the password. He goes, I don't know what it was. I was just punching shit in. So that's what he's referring to.
Well, fuck, we're reinstalling this machine.
Well, yeah, I slaved the drive into the machine to get what I needed off of it and then reinstalled it, but that was a different matter.
Yeah.
But, as far as the basics go for just getting your hands on what does a Metasploit console look like? What does it look like when you're pivoting through a middleman machine to get to something that you can't get to directly? You know, just some of these absolute basics, because what I've ran into with some of my new employees at work who have only done things in labs at school. So a lot of schools use training software or videos. And the training software is not like a real machine.
It's, oh, God, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. It's like screenshots of a desktop, and the only thing you can do is follow the instructions in the lab. So you might as well just be sitting there clicking on the next button, except, oh, it has you click on the start button. Except it's not really a start button. It's a screenshot of a Windows desktop, right? So you don't get any real experience doing this because there's no way to fuck it up. There's no way to click the wrong thing. There's no way to...
And there's more than one way to do a lot of the things they ask you to do.
Yeah.
And if you already know one way and are used to doing that, and just do the way you've always done, because it's not the one they're testing you on at the time, you fail. Even though what you did would work for what they're asking you to do.
So the reason I like this particular guide that I came across is that it has you setting up real virtual machines and walking through some of these basic labs of running Metasploit against a target machine, running a Metasploit against a target machine, and then using that machine to attack something further within the network. These are real exercises that are actually worth understanding what's going on. Because I have... Walking through the exercise, I used to keep a netbook with a vulnerable Windows XP version on it, and a Kali Linux live flash drive handy so that when I was showing people what to be concerned about, I could actually show them in real time attacking a real system. You know, because MS-0867 was the easiest thing in the world to demonstrate back in the day. The only reason it's hard to demonstrate nowadays is because getting your hands on a Windows XP ISO that doesn't have the fix applied, at least from a source that's probably not already full of malware, can be a challenge. So... Archive.org actually has a lot of the ISOs, so you can find them on there, but it takes a little bit of time to suss them out sometimes. So, but yeah, this has got some different target stuff, and a lot of it, a lot of times you'll see examples of somebody loading up an FTP server with known vulnerabilities or backdoors, or just flat out logging into a machine, which is a thing. If you have done your research ahead of time and you know your targets, you might be able to guess a password or just brute force a password. Or, back in the day with public Wi-Fi hotspots, before everybody was encrypting everything and doing client isolation, you used to be able to sniff people's passwords off the line, and then you could go try those passwords in other places and see if it worked. No, I didn't microwave a couple of flash drives when I got my first real job. Why do you ask? Don't worry. They weren't the kind that explode. Fuck.
No, they were the kind you put on little pieces of paper and make wall art out of.
But this is actually that was CDs. But this is actually a pretty good write-up of using VirtualBox, setting up a couple of VMs, what to build, and then you know, just kind of some ideas of what to go after it with and how to navigate around and get just kind of get your hands on some of the tools. And because it's real virtual machines, it's real operating systems, you're not doing these stupid pictorial labs that you can't actually mess with anything. You know, you can go off in completely the wrong direction and get good and lost in the operating system and the attacks. And, you know, but I would say take a step beyond all this, especially if you're learning the blue team side of the house, right? You know, do these labs and then go set up in the lab another machine running network monitoring software. You know, go download the Security Onion ISO and see what these attacks look like in a snort log. Or, what does it look like? And then go into the operating system, see what the logs look like after you do this, so that you can see, okay, this is an indicator of compromise because I compromised this machine. Here's what showed up in the log. So this is the kind of stuff that you can do just to get your hands on it, because a lot of times when you get into a corporate environment, you're going to be asked to deal with one very small part of that corporate environment. And it can be frustrating not having the full picture, or if you don't have a clue of what's going on in the other parts of it, you're just going through the motions and you don't really understand it, and you might as well be a person in a, say, Indian call center running off a glossy checklist trying to help somebody with a Dell computer understand why Windows is fucking up, rather than somebody who actually understands or cares about what they're doing. So, I'm picking on Indian call centers because everyone seems to outsource to them, not anything against Indians in particular, other than, you know, they can be hard to understand at times.
Plenty if you want. We haven't got the time, though.
So, anyways, that's all I've got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure decking every Thursday night for the most part, unless I'm traveling or drunk or just forget to hit the button. Madman, closing thoughts.
I have nothing. Oh, and I'm also out of bourbon, so I'm getting some more.
Are you? Closing thoughts.
If you're looking for something to watch this weekend, The Booth at the End. Highly recommended. Check it out. Do yourself a favor. But that's it for me. I'm out.
All right, sound effect time.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Oh, fuck.
Shut up, Wesley.